Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 17th, 2010. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
So far, we haven't messed anything up, Scott.
Yeah, you know, and I can't say the same for some of these other shows. You know, I was listening to the show last week. And, you know, it has these two guys. One's got a little screechy voice. Another guy's kind of got this deep kind of Italian voice. And they have this segment every week. It's called the Hand of the Week. And they take a listener's hand and they dissect it. And they give some really crappy advice because they're both, like, really crappy players, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, but it's amusing every once in a while because they mungle words and do other kinds of stuff like that. And then last week, this is how bad this podcast is, Chris. The guy was under the gun, and they all guffawed and guffawed for hours about how he was going to play one more hand under the gun and then had the blinds to come.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? Can you believe there's a show out there that doesn't know where the blinds are on the table?
Is that Click and Clack, that show you're talking about? Is this what you're talking about, Click and Clack?
I'm not going to embarrass him by, you know, saying what show it is, because that's just wrong. But, you know, really embarrassing. And, you know, and I bet they probably got some emails and phone calls from their listeners saying WTF. you know, I just hope they learned their lesson and will be better going forward, because that kind of stuff is just – it's not acceptable in the poker journalism universe that we're blazing a trail in here, Chris.
I think that they should probably be banned. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of like Brett Favre. They have this streak going on for a really long time. They won't give it up, even though they probably should take a week off. But they haven't, you know, they just never, ever, ever get a break. They come back every week, whether they're playing optimally or not. Oh, wait a minute. Hey, didn't Favre take a break? Hey,
That's right. Hey,
maybe that podcast should take a break, get a breather, and come back refreshed and with a little bit more knowledge about how poker is actually played. That's my advice to them.
I certainly hope that that's the case, and I certainly hope their listeners let them know, because, you know, something's going to have to change.
yeah, it was pretty funny. And there's a moment in the show, because I listened to it, there's a moment in the show where I think you say something about, yeah, you know, he's going to have to pay the blind, so might as well go. And I kind of pause, and I start trying to figure it out in my head.
Hey. You have to, and then we're going so quickly.
And I'm like, yeah, he needs to get up now. And I totally just bungled it, too. And I'm thinking, what? And then I think there was another moment, too, where we actually said something about, you know, I would want to play the whole rotation because we just paid the blinds.
Yep.
We did say that somewhere in there. So, I mean, we got it right and wrong. You know, what are you going to do?
I'm going to stand behind that. I want to pay the whole rotation. You know, it doesn't matter what the actual facts of that hand were. You know, it's just good advice on its own, right?
That's right. You want to play the rotation for free, you know?
Oh, but all of our listeners, yes, we appreciate the fact that that you love to make fun of us when we screw up. Fortunately, we don't screw up any more than 7-8 times a show, so not a lot of opportunities for you to lord over us.
Hey, you know what, Scott? If we were baseball players, we'd get 3 out of 10 right. We'd be Hall of Famers.
That's right. That's right.
So,
we'd be the splinted splinter.
That's right. So what the hell, man? Quit your whining. Jeez. Well, continuing in the whining theme, you know, I've been playing online a lot lately. I don't know why, to be honest with you. I just late at night. I can't sleep or whatever. I'm getting online playing. And, of course, I've been playing a lot of Stud 8 and those kinds of mixed games, so that stud games are in the rotation. But I got a question for you. You know, I'm all for giving players plenty of time to reconnect when they're playing online and they're in a hand. You know, it's not their fault that the connection went bad unless they're not paying for quality internet. But, you know, it's not their fault. And but why do online sites allow stud players who haven't even posted their ante yet the full complement of time? Just sit them out as if they went to the little Doyle's room, right, at a casino or something. Then when they come back or actually get connected, then I mean, one night, this is no lie. One night I was playing Stud 8, and a guy disconnected, and we're waiting and waiting and waiting, and finally he never. It said, you know, sitting out or something, because he didn't connect. He went to the next guy, and then he disconnected. And I literally waited for three people to connect on one hand. It was only six-handed. I mean, how can you justify letting them come? I mean, I can understand if it's during a hand, they have money invested, and, you know, it's not fair for them to get cut out of a hand and let some other, you know, jacknut raise once it checks to him, and then he gets you to force fold because you're not there. But when you're not even there for the ante, just pass them over. Why is it done this way?
All right, now I just want to clarify here. We're talking about cash games, right, in that tournament?
Yeah, yes, cash games. Right. I don't play tournaments.
Yeah, I don't. I got nothing. That just, you know, other than maybe just it takes too many lines of code to code it in that, hey, in a cash game, there's an ante before the cards are dealt. Just skip the guy. I don't know.
Oh, man, it drives me crazy. And then you want to start typing in stuff to people, you know? Oh, man, and I try not to do that. I try not to be a wise guy unless they start with me first. But when I think about how much time I've wasted just sitting there watching people connect, and then I want to, like join another Stud 8 table and try to – but, you know, I can't play multi-table stud games. I don't know how people do it. No, I see people do it, though. I don't know how they do it.
I can't imagine they do it well.
Oh, man. So, you know, I got frustrated, so I decided to you know, I just said, screw it. You know what? I'm going to grab my little iPad, and I'm going to play some poker on there or something, you know, just because I don't want to get frustrated. So I've been looking at the utilities in the App Store. There are an amazing amount of poker utilities for, like, the iPhone and iPad and stuff. And, I mean, I don't know if there are – I can't speak intelligently about many things, especially whether or not they are for, like, the Droid and stuff. I don't know what kind of apps they have. But the apps for, like, the Apple stuff, it's incredible. The Wynn in Vegas has one. It tells you what games are being spread at the room. And like how many people are at a table and if their seats open, and that's pretty incredible to me.
That is pretty cool.
You know, I mean, you could literally be in your hotel room or you could be down the street, say, oh, look at that, there's a 30-60 game going on, you know, and you can drive down there and just get in or call them up. I think there's even a thing on there to call them. Like if it's on your phone, you can literally hit their phone number and just call them up and say, hey, I see you got that spread and, you know, save me a seat or whatever. The PPA has one. It's really cool. You know, it's all the stuff about, you know, look for your senator in your area or their mission statement or their newsletters and all that stuff. It's all in one. All these are free too. They're all free apps just to do it. There's some interesting ones that keep track of your winnings, you know, like, and does your bankroll for you and stuff. Some of them are free. Some of them you pay for, but it's pretty credible. And it got me to thinking, you know, hey, we have a newsletter, we have issues, right? And I don't mean, like,
we have a lot of issues.
Yeah, I don't
we
mean
have
like
a lot
that.
Of baggage.
I mean, we have magazine issues. You know, we have the poker show, the poker cast. We have some other stuff. We have television things and a website and stuff. So I'm thinking, you know, hey, what? You know, a lot of the people who listen to our show and even the ones that are in our home game, they're like IT programming type listeners, right? I mean, you know, if they ever get bored, what do you think, Scott? Make us up a little app, man. Let us put an app
out
there. App us up. I mean, you can see the benefits of having an app, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd have to go out and get an iPhone because there's only like 7 apps for the BlackBerry.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It'd be cool to know that there's an app out there that I can't use until I finally upgrade my phone.
But, you know, the other thing, too, is like you could put apes in there and you could be like warnings, you know, hey, apes event, you know, like little sort of, you know, bells go off or something or just send you an alert on your phone, like a text message says, hey, apes event today at noon your time, or, you know, and it's, and you can say what the name is, you know, Stud 8 or Horse or I mean, there are so many possibilities for a useful anti-up app that I think somebody out there should write one for us.
That would be called the Apes app. The
Apes app. There you go.
It's apps with a little I in between the A and the P.
Apes apps.
That's how it would show up on the iTunes App Store.
That would be so cool. And like even like, you know, the little icon that they have, you know, it could be like our little A, or it could be a little monkey. You know, I don't care what it is. Just let's create an app and put it out there, man. Come on, guys, get with us. I mean, obviously, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but you guys could do it. Do it for us, man. I want to see an app.
Well, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, these things are taking off, and there are a lot of good ones out there, as you said. And I'm curious, though, because, you know, we get these questions a lot from people as to, you know, what kind of information are you looking for that's not aggregated the way you want it to be? How's that?
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about even just on a website, which obviously is, you know, old school technology.
Right.
You know, the web, geez. Who ever uses the web anymore? But you know, what kind of information can we aggregate? I mean, I'm sure the big kahuna out there, which the first person to ever come up with this, I think, is going to make a bank, would be to do exactly what the wins, but for all the rooms. You know, yeah. You just have a little app that just, you know, hey, look at the poker room, what games are being played there, what tournaments are going on. You know, so rather than, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when Fast and I went out to Vegas, or not to Vegas, but to L.A. for the big meetup there. You know, you pick up the magazine there, and then you're sitting there. Fast was on one phone, I'm on one phone. We're calling around all the different casinos trying to find out what games are going, and then we compare our notes, and then we jump in the car and drive to the next one. And, you know, how cool it would be just to, you know, beep, boop, boop, bing, all right, here's where we're going.
I love how you think, like, the app on your phone goes beep, boop, boop, beep. That's like 1969, you know what I mean? That's,
yeah,
like, so
you could code that into it and make it a little special.
Beep, boop, boop,
now, boop. With sound effects.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, and I don't even think that the hard part would be creating the app. It's kind of like, you know, I want to write that shorthanded book. The hard part is getting the resources together to actually do what they need to do on their end for us. Like Wynn probably wrote their own program, so they told the guy, hey, make sure you update this into the system and have the system updated through here or whatever. But, you know, that's the thing, is you'd have to get through to all these casinos and say, hey, you know, here's your RSS feed or your coding or whatever the hell it is. You know, I have no it could be LMNOP for all I know. I have no idea what
we're
it's called.
We're just embarrassing ourselves continuing this discussion at this point.
But no, I think you're right. I think the person that can actually wrangle these major casinos together, you know, because we had a state an app actually that we were giving away for a little while from one of our local players here who had designed one named George. His name is George.
Yeah.
And that one was kind of like that. It kind of told you like tournament schedules and stuff, and but it wasn't like live games, what live games are being spread at that moment. So, you know, any real time app like that, that's going to be a huge undertaking, but it probably would be pretty successful.
Yeah,
you got to think about how many millions of players play poker, and if they all can get that for like 99 cents, you know, get a million people to do it, you got $1 million right there. So that's pretty cool. But, you know, there's one utility. It's not a utility, it was a game. I gotta say, there's a, when I first got my iPhone, I got a heads-up poker one. And if you're in the same room with someone else who has the same program and you have Wi-Fi, you can play against that person. Otherwise, you play against the computer, you know. And so now they've come out with an advanced one that's for heads-up Omaha, which I was psyched. I couldn't believe it. Because usually, wow. Yeah, all these programs, they don't have stud or anything like that. They just have regular hold'em because that's what everybody plays. But finally, they come out with an Omaha one. And I said, well, that's just pretty cool. Let me play heads-up Omaha against the computer. And I got to tell you, it's like playing against Russ Hamilton on Ultimate Bet, and Russ Hamilton can pick the cards that come for you as well. I'm not lying. I mean, you could not beat this program, I mean, unless you get absolutely incredibly lucky, because it totally loads the cards for the other hand to win. It's hilarious.
Awesome.
I mean, I've beaten it a few times, maybe, you know, like 5 or 6 times maybe, and literally a couple of times I just gave up and, like, got it all in. It was pot limit, too. Got it all in, knowing that he had pocket aces, and I had pocket kings, and, you know, with my other kickers or whatever, but and sucked out on it or something. I mean, it's absolutely as if it picks the ideal card that would give you, like, a set, but give him a boat on the river, or give you Flush, but give him a boat on the river. You know what I mean? It was just absolutely hilarious. And it literally was like picking the perfect card to make you lose. It was hilarious. You couldn't beat it. Oh, my God. I mean, thank God there's no regulation for that, because, you know, if there was, you know, they'd never be able to sell an app. But, I mean, it was pretty funny. I couldn't believe it. You couldn't beat the game. You could not beat it. It was as if the guy was picking the cards for him. Oh, it was brutal. Absolutely brutal. So don't get that app. It's an Omaha game. It's like the only Omaha game out there for any of these Apple things. So don't get it. I'm telling you. You're just going to be frustrated by it. I'm telling you.
Would they be any more frustrated playing that Heads Up Omaha app than they were playing in the Heads Up free roll last Saturday?
It's possible. I really think if you experienced this, no matter how many people were in the Heads Up event, you couldn't be that, I'm telling you, exasperated. It was bad. But I didn't even attempt playing it. I heard there was like thousands of people in it, so I said, I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, you know, despite our best efforts to, you know, close off the free roll, make it as exclusive as possible, you know, because, you know, we got all these great ideas on how to keep the interlopers out. Unfortunately, all of them are unworkable. but one of them that people kept pressing us is, hey, just announce it on the podcast. Well, we can't do that because we got, you know, people to read the magazine, and people to do newsletters, stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
So this one free roll, we like, all right, we'll try just the podcast version. Didn't post it anywhere. We just put it on the podcast, right?
Yep. Didn't answer any emails. Didn't answer any personal messages on the forum. Nothing.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, about 24 hours before it was going off, it was looking pretty good, Chris. And then, boom. Moscow got the password.
Yeah.
And when I say not Moscow, it's not just the name of a guy. The entire city.
I thought we shut Russia out, though. I thought they turned Russia off or something.
Yeah, well, they did. I'm guessing what happened is when they reprogrammed the new one that they probably forgot to click that little dangle doggle or whatever, and boom, we got screwed. So, so unfortunately, it filled up 1,024 people. They actually put a cap on it, which is good. And it sounded pretty brutal. I don't even know how many of our actual players actually suffered through it and got a seat. So hopefully all of them. But
what's pretty funny is that there's that many people who actually live in Moscow. I can't believe it. I mean, why would you live there? You know,
it's really cold there now. So, yeah, you know, you got to be inside playing poker, creating bots, all kinds of cool stuff like that. So,
it's damn Russians.
So, once again, we will fall on the sword and apologize for the debacle. And I got to say, I'm not trying to whip the nation into a frenzy here, Chris. But I am at an absolute 100% loss on how to make free rolls work and keep people out.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the hardest core, no dolphin in the tuna net kind of way to do it, and it failed. It failed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, if we're going to do free rolls again next year, there's just no way to stop it. There's just no way to stop it. So, at this point, I don't see why we should try to do the free rolls. Just frustrate everyone, give a bunch of tournament seats away to Jose 978, and just
Vladimir.
Kick everybody off.
Vladimir.
Right, right. So I don't know. I mean, we'll go back. You know, it's getting about that time of year to talk to Stars about what we're gonna do next year. So you know, what I'll try to do is find a way to take that generosity that they're offering us. That's worked out to be about $55 a free roll.
Yeah.
And put it somewhere else where the nation will actually benefit from it, and not these getthefreerollpassword.com forum cockroaches that I call them.
I love it when they and this is not to offend anyone who doesn't speak English as their first language, but I love when they send you emails and try to be all cool and everything, but they just don't get how to be cool in English, and they just mangle it, you know. And it's like, yeah, dude, I know you don't listen to our show, you know. And if you mangle English like this, then you're not reading our magazine either. So I think it's pretty hilarious. I get a good kick out of that, but I feel bad that it results in them having 1,000 people in their free roll for us. So. Yeah, we need to figure something else out, and if not, then just not have the free rolls and put that generosity towards something else somehow.
All right, but we'll look forward to the positive stuff, and on Saturday at noon will be the actual Apes event for the No Limit Hold'em Heads Up. I'm looking forward to this. I'm hoping that the interlopers don't screw it up and slow it down. Because mostly I've got a holiday party that the wife got me hooked up for Saturday night. So.
That's the one that's like at 5:30 or something, right?
And yeah. So, you know, we're going to have to make this pretty quick, guys.
Get out of the way.
Yeah. Because hell hath no furry like Scott's wife scorned.
Hell hath no furry?
We'll talk about that on next week's show. Apologize for that.
That was a very unfortunate slip right there, man. That was very unfortunate. I wonder what Freud would say about that one.
Oh, man. All right. Well, again, it's noon on Saturday, December 18th. No Limit Hold'em. Heads up. Go to antiupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S, and get the password, though, or you could just probably go anywhere on the internet at this point.
Yeah, you just call Teddy KGB.
Right,
tell you.
Probably have it. Sign up. And then our next free roll, sure to attract 4,000 people, will be Wednesday, January 5th at 9 p.m. That will be our last No Limit Hold'em event of the year.
I will be on a cruise ship that day.
It's only going to cost you 65 cents a minute then to
to try to win a $5 seat. Yeah, the internet cost me $47, but I won a $5.50 seat. This is great. So, yeah, I won't be playing in that one, but good luck, everybody, in the last free roll of the year.
Yeah, we just got a couple good events left after that that crappy little No Limit Hold'em next month. Then we finish with an eight-game mix, and then it's the Tournament of Champions. So
very exciting.
A couple other housekeeping items. We'll just remind folks that the cruise booking page is open at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. And Monday I get to tour the gorgeous Navigator of the Seas ship down in Fort Lauderdale. And I got to say, I was very, very impressed. The room that we are going to have for our poker product is going to be fantastic. And the ship in general is just great. You know, I just got off of that great shebang allure ship, the brand new one, right, and that's just, you know, a modern marvel. But the Navigator really has almost all the same stuff, with a couple big exceptions, but for the most part it is the best ship that we have ever had an Antiup cruise on. So I'm really excited for that, and it's the same class ship that we'll be taking in a year from now out of New Orleans too. So two great ships next year. So
very cool. Yeah, that's one of the frustrating things about being in the Tampa area, is they can't have too big of a ship because of that Skyway Bridge.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So that's what makes us move to other ports, and now we get to reap the benefits of having Fort Lauderdale so close by. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it too. You know me, I'm not really that big on cruising, but I'm softening up, and when you're telling me that there's this big, big ship down there, I'm really looking forward to seeing it too, so it's going to be exciting.
And then, of course, yeah, we're still looking for ambassadors. Go to antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. And fill out our quick little application there. I'm really looking for folks: West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Atlantic City, New Hampshire, New York. I know we have listeners in those areas, Chris.
Yeah.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
I would love nothing more than to get to our Antiup listeners to be part of our ambassador program.
Yeah.
And be their eyes and ears up there, and write some columns there. And who knows? You could be the next next famous columnist that moves on to bigger and better things.
You could be the next Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah. Who was that guy again?
All right, well, we didn't have any feedback last week, but this week we do. Comes from Mark Wittig. He says, the home game I play in has a chip that makes your opponent show their hand also. This is in retrospect to what I talked about when I was at Frank's home game, Dr. Toscano, and he had that chip made everybody take one. He says, we call it the Missouri chip after the Show Me State, which is pretty funny. It's cute.
Very clever.
You get one chip, costs no money, and doesn't have any value if you don't use it. You can use it only once a night, and you can only use it to block. And you can also use it to block another person's Missouri chip. So if they say, I want to see your hand, you can put your chip out there and say, sorry, you can't, but you both used your chips now. He said the fun thing is if you knock someone out that has not used the chip, you now have two chips to use. It's just a fun thing that we use to keep it fun and learn about each other's play. You know, one quick thing, too, is someone else contacted us and said that they thought that you should, you know, you can reject the chip. You should be able to reject the chip, but that means that you can't see anybody else's hand either, so you just don't participate. And the guys who want to do it, those are the people you can ask. So, yeah, so that's kind of interesting, too. If you want to
take a spot on the bench, like Jeff Post would say.
Oh, man, don't get me started on him, okay? I mean, It's absolutely. I want to create one of those like mixes that has him like repeating the same line from a million shows in a row and put it on YouTube. But
it would be just one show. You just have to get one line because he says the same stupid stuff every. I don't even know why they have writers for that show anymore.
That's what that cracks me up. I love seeing the credits and it's like writers. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, that guy wrote the show 14 years ago and they've used the same script the whole time. All right, well, anyway, get back to Mark. He says also he thinks that the club that we mentioned from, was it Falls River or Falls View? Whatever.
The High School Poker Club.
Yeah, the High School Poker Club.
Falls Church.
Yeah, Falls Church. They should join forces with some of the other clubs and get some unity going on in the school. They should go to like the woodworking club and get their tables built, and go to the graphic arts club and get their poker chip labels printed. And it's a win-win for all. Everyone gets to do their little projects, you know. He said you can even go to the sewing club if you want, and they'll make some nice seat cushions for you.
Wow!
They can make the felt too. They can make the felt for the table and everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, do they even have home ec anymore? Home ec classes?
They did when I was in school. I don't know.
Well, I know, but we were in school like 7 generations ago.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Probably. I would think they probably have to, you know, or, you know, it could be a trade school. You go to the neighboring trade school. You know, I mean, what the hell? You get it all.
Across the river.
Camp Minnetonka.
Oh, man. But no, it's a good way of, a little cross promotion going on there.
Yeah, and the more clubs who get involved, the more harder it's going to be for them to say no as a, you know, as an administration or whatever. And,
you get the athletic supporters to cheer you.
The athletic supporters?
Yeah, absolutely.
You mean the jock straps? I don't understand. What are you... Oh, man. The furry jock straps?
Yeah, if you can't be an athlete, be an athletic supporter. Isn't that what they said on Greece?
Yes. Oh, man, you're killing me. All right, you know what? Let's just end this. And tell me what's going on with the Antiup News Desk.
All right, Chris, with just a few weeks left in the lame duck session of Congress and really just a few days left of active lawmaking, multiple sources are reporting that the online poker bill that Senator Harry Reid has been championing is all but dead. It was not attached to the tax cut bill, which cleared the Senate on Wednesday, and there are precious few bills remaining to attach it to.
So is this where we go, or is this where we go, damn?
Yeah,
I'm not sure what to do.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I guess from the last week's show, you know, when we talked about it, I thought about it more, and I became an athletic supporter of this bill. So I kind of wanted to see it go through now, even though it was kind of a little bit perilous for us, potentially. But here's the thing, you know, still holding out hope, you know, still got a one-outer. And you know, if it happens, it happens. And you know, I'll be one of those guys that say, if it's meant to be, it'll happen. So it means I just give up on life. What? You know, I'm just gonna let fate drive me around.
Well, one thing that it kind of made me feel a little bit better about, like the blackout period, was I talked to a full tilt pro yesterday, mm-hmm. And she said that she felt like Full Tilt wouldn't go anywhere, and in the fact that they would still offer free play, which we know that would probably happen, but she also said probably free rolls to get people involved, and the pros would still play in a lot of these free rolls just to stay into the consciousness of American players and stuff. So if they're still doing that, they might want to promote free rolls, which means they still might want to advertise or get players to sign up. And plus, you know, if it's a 15-month hiatus, I know there was something in there that said 2 or 3 years, but there are loopholes everywhere, and I really doubt that they're going to keep them to it. There's just no way they're going to have that many years away from the poker. So, you know, they're at the end of it, 3 or 4 months to go, they're going to want to really start to ramp up their branding again, so they'd probably try to get back into the swing of advertising or things like that. So I'm sure Stars do the same thing with us. So, you know, I feel a little bit better here after talking to her, but still, yeah, I would like for this to not happen right now, then have them, you know, work on legislation of how to do it properly over the next 2 years. Where okay, there's a blackout period, but you can't just reward two huge conglomerates like that only. And I think that it might happen if that way, you know, because he's obviously got this thing drawn up already. So I think they might tinker with it over the next couple of years, and then if the Democrats happen to swing in their favor, then maybe it'll come back. That's really what I was kind of hoping for. I realize it's two more years away, but really 2 years isn't that really long when you think about Obama's been in office pretty much 2 years now. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it goes by pretty quick.
But you're assuming that that we get better lawmakers in 2 years. It could be 10.
No, right. You're right. It hardly ever happens that way.
Yeah.
You know,
but again, it's out of our control anyhow, right?
Yeah, nothing we could do, so we're just going to make the best of it. Speaking of the best of it, Tiffany Michelle and Maria Ho, who flamed out famously when they appeared on The Amazing Race, are back on the CBS reality show. The 18th season is being billed as Unfinished Business, featuring teams who didn't win the first time around but are fan favorites. Interesting.
Yeah, you know, I was watching the finale this week, and then they did a little preview, and they're like, we're bringing back your fan favorites because they have unfinished business. And then they click through a bunch of them, and I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? And my wife was like, what? I'm like, them? They put Tiffany and Maria back on? I mean, am I a bad poker person, Chris, that I just don't want to see these two on the show again?
Well,
does that make me bad?
I don't think you're a bad poker person. I think you're just a bad person in general. You like your television a certain way. You like your television, you know, to be the way you want it to be. And when you watch people on a show who basically flamed out and gave up or whatever, that's not what you're looking for. Amazing Race. Kind of like when we watched Survivor a few weeks ago. Two people quit the show in mid-show. You know, you're 10 people left and you quit. What? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, I mean, I would never want them to come back to Survivor if they have a all-star one or whatever. So I agree with you. I don't think you're a bad person.
All right. Well, you know, the other thing I thought was interesting is they're the fan favorites.
Yeah, that's interesting to me, too.
Now, I don't remember going back and reading the polls when they were on and how popular they were, but I can't imagine that they were a fan favorite, were they?
No, I think fan favorite means ultimate bet will pay some money to have them on TV. So.
Yeah, there's a sponsor favorite.
Exactly.
All right, well, finally this week, Annie Up News Hound, Belinda Bauer, sent us this. She reports that a racehorse named Cosenza recently sold for 8,500 guineas at a sale in Newmarket, England. And, Chris, buddy, I'm sorry, that is below average.
Hey, I always said I was a cheap date. I mean, I never said I was expensive. And, you know, and being a guinea myself, you know, as they say, 8,500 guineas, oh, my God. I don't even know what that – how much does that actually work out to be, like
– is guineas even a currency?
I didn't even know that was a currency.
Are you getting, like, guinea pigs or, you know, okay, birds or something?
In exchange for this – low down crappy horse, you get to run your own guinea pig farm.
I mean, I think Santa's little helper got more than that on The Simpsons.
I believe that was 10,000 guineas on the Simpsons. Wow, that's wild. A horse with the same name as me. That's
really
weird.
Well, it gives a new spin to backing my horse in this race.
Oh, man, that's pretty wild. I mean, you know, people have...
You're not going to win any flips coming up.
People have told me that I have the nose of a horse, so that... I wonder if that's my cousin.
You have at least one other body part of a horse, you know.
Family. Oh, my God. So my cousin, Seamus. Seamus Cosenza. Sold in England. I can't believe it. That's pretty wild. I mean, long is a pretty standard, basic name that could be duplicated anywhere, but
you're not gonna bet on a horse called Long.
No, I know, but I mean,
you ain't boring than that.
What are you saying, that you're gonna bet on a horse named Cosenza?
It rolls off the tongue. It's got a little, if you don't know anybody named Cosenza, you wouldn't know it was a name.
And bringing up the rear as Cosenza, bringing up the rear. I mean, it's just weird to name a horse that. I wonder where it's got to be, like they use their family name or I mean, obviously it didn't come from like Cosenza, Italy, which is a city in the southern region of the country. But wow, that's pretty weird. That's pretty funny, man. Come on, somebody find something out there with Long being sold for cheaper. I want to know.
I'm going to bid it up to at least 8,501 guineas.
All right.
Got all fired up.
Sounds like a Bob Barker skit there, but or I should say Drew Carey. All right, well, our hotline number, apparently people are forgetting the number because no one called this week that was worth using. But it was 813-448-1120. Call that number. We use it. We'll give you something cool, right? What could we possibly give them if they call us and we put them on our show, Scott?
Yeah, we're just flushing down the toilet one of these great T-shirts from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerwear.com. No winner this week. That shirt doesn't just get queued up and saved on the swag show. Just not available.
No,
wasted.
No. You're just not going to get it. Sorry about that.
Should have called.
Sorry about that. all right, so the mailbag is Trevor Smith, and I'll let you try to say that city name there.
Oh, it's Petaluma. Come on.
I don't know. It's the first time you actually said something confidently, so I don't. I guess I have to believe you. I don't know.
I spent a week in Petaluma one night.
Oh, jeez.
Joke. I have no idea where Petaluma is, and I don't have an idea whether that's right or not. But
that was good, though. It sounds good to me.
Stick it to it, yeah. I did see a racehorse named Petaluma, though, with Laughed Cosenza.
Yeah, it sold for 8,600 guineas. all right. Well, Trevor says, my friend is organizing a charity tournament at his church. He mentioned that he could not play, though, because he's dealing. He thought that was strange because a VFW charity tournament that he played in always was self-dealt. Mm-hmm. And are non-compensated dedicated dealers legal for a charity tournament, he wonders?
well, here's the thing. Charity tournaments have different laws in every single state and every single city.
Yeah.
So, we're not lawyers. Never pretend to be. So I can't answer to the illegality of it, but I think we can agree that, generally speaking, from a fairness standpoint, if you're organizing a tournament, you probably shouldn't be playing in it.
Right.
I mean, what happens when you have a floor call? You go, floor, and then you turn yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And make a call. So, yeah. You know, if you're out there and you're planning these things, my advice is if you're organizing them, organize it. Spend your time running the tournament. Don't be playing.
Yeah, that's great.
You want to play, then don't organize it. Get somebody else to organize it.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where, the participants deal. Because if you're doing charity, the last thing you want to do is absolutely. Have to hire, you know, a whole crew and waste that money when it could be going to the charity. So yeah, that's fine. But if you're running it yourself and you're dealing it, that you can't play too. I mean, it's unethical, you know. And thanks for sending that in because, you know, you often wonder what different people are going through out there. You know, obviously California is the card playing mecca, so you'd think that that's another reason why they probably have strict rules in place for some of their things, especially in Petaluma, you know. Who knows?
Wow.
Well,
you did pretty well there, Petaluma.
I followed your lead there. I really don't know if that's how you say it, but looks pretty good to me.
Well, Trevor, we are going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Annie Up, and feel free to give that to your friend since he didn't get to play, and he's going to be dealing. Maybe he should have good cards to deal with, right?
That's right. Yeah, very good cards. Oh, man. All right, we get to ride along a little further with Colombo this week. Last week, we shoved with our, I guess it was what, Pocket Queens, right?
Yep.
And got called by Ace King, and we won a race for 275,000 units. Now we're at the 5-10-1 level. We get pocket aces in early position. We raise to 30,000, pretty standard. Get a caller in the big blind. Flop comes 10 of clubs, 7 of hearts, 6 of diamonds. The guy in the big blind now calls time and then bets 50 grand, which is almost pot, a little less than pot. And Colombo is saying, "Hey, are we ready to shove?" As he says, that little Kermit the Frog voice. Kind of.
Are we ready to shove?
Are we ready to shove?
There is no try, only do. all right. Here's the thing: we have 240,000 guineas left, right?
Yeah.
Shove? To me, that seems a little wacky. Now, I'm sure people are going to make a case why it's not wacky, but. Here's the thing. If he has two pair or better, he's definitely going to call a shove. He's not going to fold that if we shove, right? And that means that we have to catch to improve. So, and we're probably drawing thin to do that with just pocket aces. So, to me, I'm not seeing any advantage here to shoving. But, you know, if we just call, we have 190K left. Leaves us a lot of options on the turn. You know, maybe the guy's taking a stab at this, and we can raise on the turn. We can catch. You know, if he's a lot of heat, then we can fold. But then we're like giving up the control of the hand. We're in position here, and we raise pre-flop. We should be giving up the control of the hand. So we need to raise. A min raise isn't going to do anything but build a bigger pot. However, Chris, if we raised 150K, kind of 3X it there, we're going to get the information we need without the risk of shoving. You know, if he folds, great. If he, you know, if he's just trying to steal here, then we take it down and we didn't put our whole stack at risk. If he calls, then we can get down the showdown at the same price with as shoving without the risk. You know, we can check behind on the turn if we want. And if he raises, well, you know, then we still got an extra option. It's not a great option, I admit. But we could decide that we want to fold at that point because we're behind. We still have 9 big blinds left. Not great, but we have that option. More likely, we're just going to call, and it's the same result to me as shoving. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bump this baby to 150K. We don't have any fold equity here, I don't think. So why blindly risk our stack when we have an insurance policy that we can use?
There are so many things wrong with that, like you just
Excellent.
Said.
Excellent.
I can't even begin. You know, well, first of all, I can't see betting 60% of my stack on a re-raise or a raise. I mean, if you're going to bet 50%, they tell you then you should probably just shove. If you're going to bet 60%, I can't get away from it if he re-raises. I can't. I've put way too much money out there to fold. And
I'm not saying that we would get away from it.
So you're saying you would fold with 90,000 left?
I'm saying that we retain the option to fold if we want. If you shove, you can't say, wait a minute, give me 90K of that back. I had to change my mind. Unless you have one of those chips.
What if he calls you, though? What if he calls your raise and then a 2 comes and he bets again? Are you really going to full pocket aces to a 10-7-6 deuce board?
At that point, we'll have 190K left. Yeah, that's a lot of chips.
No, you'll have 90K left. If you bet 150, you start with 240. Yeah, you have 90 chips left. That's only 9. That's not even an M of like 7.
Right.
So 190 is one thing. 90 is.
But again, I mean, here's the thing to me. I get what you're saying, uh-huh. And I'm not going to argue with the math on 50%, 60%. You shove. What I'm saying is, I'm willing to put my stack in. Right.
Right.
And normally people say, well, if you're going to put your stack in, you might as well put it all in now, and then you get the fold equity. I don't see a fold equity here. This guy is either making a play at the pot, in which case he'll fold to any raise, or he's got his probably beat, in which case we're going to have to catch up. Now, there's obviously an option in the middle there where he's got like the Cosenza or something that we're ahead. But you know, it's different if I think shoving here is going to get him to fold a good hand. But it's not.
Well, let me ask you why I don't think if with your thinking I would call then with your thinking, because why would I risk more chips if this guy's got me beat? I'll find out on the turn if he has me beat, and then I still have he only bet 50. I'd still have a then I'd have my 190K. You know what's the difference
if you
between
call,
that?
You don't
and raising?
Get him to fold if he's making a play at the pot.
Well, I think your call also makes him check if he's making a play at the pot, and then you could steal it on the turn because you're in position.
Oh, all right. Oh, okay. Well, that was one of my options, but but you're giving up control of the hand a little bit there.
You're not controlling the hand. But with the min raise, you're only controlling it for one scenario. If
well,
he shows, then you're folding.
Raising 3X.
Oh yeah. Well, whatever. You know what I mean? With the raise.
Well, whatever. That makes a big difference. That's
well,
what I mean,
you're betting 60 grand. You're 60%. You're telling him you're not folding. So then he shoves if he has a hand, and then you've got 90,000 left. I would rather just if I'm going to do what you were saying, I would rather call. Like you said, I think I would rather call. With what you were thinking, I would rather try to call and see if he. And not floating, because I have a legitimate hand. I have aces. I'm not really floating. I have a real hand. And right. Then I see what he does. But for me, if I had to do it from my standpoint, yes. He asks, am I ready to shove? Yes, I'm ready to shove. Generally, when someone does this, like you said, they're either really strong or really weak. And I find it very hard to imagine someone with a set or two pair here, or even a straight, taking the lead away from me when... One, I was the initial raiser, and two, so far throughout this tournament, the only hands he's showed down are like aces and kings and queens and things like that, so they know we probably have an overpair. So to bet into us is a really donk bet, and I really think that they don't have a hand, because if he had a hand, he probably would have checked to us, let us bet, then check raise. So I really think we're ahead, and I am shoving, because I can't mathematically just bet 50% of my stack, so I'm going to shove. That was how I was thinking.
All right, what about the fact that the guy called time?
It's another friggin' ploy. It's another...
You think it's a ploy?
Sure, because he has nothing to think about if he has a huge hand. What's to think about?
Well, maybe he's trying to control the pot.
I think he can control the pot by betting $50,000 without having to think about betting $50,000 into a $60,000 pot. I mean, I don't know. It just seems real shady to me between betting into the preflop raiser who's always had big hands and taking time to do it. Most of the time, when guys take time to do it, they're doing something weird. You know, you can see if it's a really big decision, but when you're the first person to bet, you don't take time. You take time when you have to make a decision. You know what I mean? It just seems weird. It just seems real fishy to me, everything that he's done here. So I am reshoving with – I got pocket aces. You know what I mean? He had to have – you know, he might have jacks or something.
I understand that. And I think there's a very – it's a very thin semantic discussion we're having here.
Yeah.
But I do think there's an opportunity here where we have a little bit of insurance policy for the same effect. You really don't think that raising the 150K is going to do the same thing as shoving?
I don't know. Maybe.
It at least retains an option that you've got 90K. Now, like I said, it's probably pretty ridiculous not to put that last 90K in regardless. But we at least retain that option.
The other thing,
and
too, is we don't know
what stop,
the
you could take
has.
Some time. You could think about the tournament, and you're like, maybe 90K. Maybe I am beat. Maybe 90K. I can come back for him. But once you put it in, it's in.
The other thing, too, is we don't know how many chips the big blind has, right?
Well, you said he had an M of 9, so, you know, I kind of figured that he's a little bit below us.
Yeah.
I mean, I did, when I started thinking about it, that was obviously an important detail to have, and that was the information that Colombo gave us was, an M of 9.
Well, an M of 9 would mean that he probably has, it's 15,000, 16, it's 15 and 10, so it's 25,000 every time around, so
right.
He's got 9 times that, so he's got about the same amount of chips we have, probably.
Right, right.
But I'm just sticking to my guns here. I think I do think that this is a donk play by betting into us like this.
I don't disagree, but I mean, why take the risk if you could just raise 3x?
Yeah, cause I just think because I can't fold after that. You could get away from it because you're real patient that way, I guess, and think that an M of 5 or 6 is good. But to me,
I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying
I just couldn't get away from it. If I went 3x and then he shoved on me, I couldn't get away from
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm not asking you to get away from it. I'm just saying you give you the option to get away from it. If you actually think about it, you go, gosh, dagnom it, you raised me. Now I'm probably beat. I know I need a call because I got all these chips in the pot. At least I have the option to think about it one more time.
Yeah.
One more time. I don't see the risk in that, to be honest myself. Obviously you do.
Well.
Stupid.
Well, the other thing, too, is what if he has, like, Jack 10? Now you're giving him a chance to hit a Jack, you know, to make his two pair.
Jack 10, you know. When we raise preflop and then he bets into us and we re-raise him, he's really going to call with Jack 10?
I don't know.
Really?
Well, I mean, how many people bet into
really,
you?
Really, Chris?
How many people really bet into you when you raise preflop and the flop is 10, 7, 6?
No, but I mean, I think an ace-10 or something like that might be somewhat legitimate if he thinks that we have ace-king or something like that. And, you know, a 50K bet into that is almost pot. It's a pretty substantial bet.
Well, ask the person on the fax machine.
I would do it, but...
Ask the person on the fax machine. Tell me what they think.
No, they're calling to say... They're defending me.
They're defending you.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. I appreciate it.
Well, the forum... I think we had, like, one response on the forum, which is starting to make me a little frustrated. It's like, okay, do you not dig the ride along with Colombo? Because every week now we're getting, like, one, none, you know... Come on, guys. Let us know what you think. But the person who did was
shopping for Kwanzaa and stuff.
He was shoving, thinking that the opponent was, like you said, on the Cosenza. Since a better hand would likely let us lead out, he thinks, oh, that's what I said. So he kind of got both of our thoughts here. That he probably thinks that, you know, if the guy had a better hand than us, he would let us bet.
He's like a long Senza.
Oh, man.
Tell the best parts of me and the worst parts of you into one human.
And we'd still only fetch 8,500 guineas. All right, well, that was a nice spirited discussion, so let's see what actually happens, and then move on from there.
Welcome back. Well, I can't imagine you're not shoving here. It's getting late, and time for being timid was over long ago. Plus, what could he have here? He flopped two pair? Probably not. But I'm not deep enough to make a big lay down here. Plus, why would he bet here? What's he trying to accomplish? Perhaps he's just testing to see if my original bet was a steal.
A lot of accidents, sir.
So I shove my chips in, and after a short delay, he folds. It's winning hands with big pairs that allow you to avoid those races for your tournament life. And we've been lucky to this point in that a bunch of ours held and we came from behind once. But just like that bad pass interference call, you gotta take what you get. And so now it's time to finish like a pro. Still at the 5,000, 10,000, 1,000 level, but this time with 330k in chips, we get dealt ace of hearts, queen of hearts in early position and make a raise to 30k. Small blind calls and we see a flop of 5 of hearts, 10 of diamonds, 4 of clubs. And he checks. What do you want to do? C-bet?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our PokerStars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, since Andy Up's lead strategist has last been on our show, Chris, he's been busy adding to that pearly shiny resume of his, making a World Poker Tour final table, just missing the TV table, finishing 5th in the FTOPS main event, and joining the roster of pros who promote Bust Out Poker. As always, it's a pleasure to welcome Lee, all my childs, to the show.
No, it's Lee, don't call me Julia Childs.
Oh, very good, very good.
What's going on, guys?
Good to have you back, buddy. Good to have you back.
Thanks. And Scott just summed up everything we were going to talk about, so it looks like it'll be a short show.
All right, let's move on to the hand of the week.
All right. Yeah, don't worry. We'll get to the hand of the week. We'll make sure this is not a short show.
Yeah.
That was a donkey play, sir. Don't play the hand like that again. All right. See you next time.
All right. See you next time.
Oh, man. All right. So, Lee, for a man who already has a dozen things to be very thankful for, you've got a beautiful wife. You've got a great new child. You live in a warm weather climate like Virginia. You know, you're buying Chris and I in the World Series of Poker main event. You know, you've got a lot to be thankful for, but I imagine that this Thanksgiving was even more special at the Child's compound after this amazing tear that you've been on.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. Definitely, you summed it all up, I think pretty much in order there, I think. So, yeah, it's been a nice little run lately after a pretty bad one. So it's good. You know, I was telling everybody for a while that, you know, I guess it's running so bad at poker, but running great in life, with Jenny and Braden, so I can't really complain. But now finally some things look like they're starting to come back together with poker. Been working on my game a lot and made some key changes, I think. And it's working out pretty well so far.
You know, I was telling my wife last night, you're going to be on the show today, and she says, how's Braden? And I said, you know, every time I see Lee, you know, he's got his little iPhone, and he's got all the pictures he takes of his son. I said, and he's got so many, and he takes them so often that when he kind of like spins through the photos, it's as if it's a cartoon and the kid's growing before my eyes. It's hilarious.
I was just looking at that the other day because what happens is I take a bunch at once too. So if you flip through them fast, it actually looks like a movie. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say. It looks like he's like growing in the movie. You know, it's hilarious.
It's like that's
effect.
How they do movies or something, like taking a bunch of still shots and making them go together. I don't know.
Stan Winston, you're not. But let's move on here. Let's start with the World Poker Tour final table. Now, a lot of people, you know, they say a final table, they don't see on TV. They're like, oh, what the hell? You know, obviously 6 players make the TV table, but 9 make the final table. You know, there aren't a lot of people who can even say that they've made final tables in the World Series main event and a World Poker Tour main event. What does that feel like?
Man, it was really good. You know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's bittersweet, just like the other tournament we'll talk about. I mean, anytime you don't come out on top, it can be bittersweet, you know, with prize pools being as steep as they are and everything. You know, that's... You know, playing for titles, not only the cash and making that TV table would have been huge. Now, the WPT has made some changes for this upcoming season, though, where they're doing a lot of coverage from day one. So there should be some TV coverage along the way and certainly down to bubble play. So kind of hoping I'll still get some TV time there. But, you know, obviously not the big stage and all that stuff. And and not being there for the cash presentation and then taking down the title. But, you know, that's okay. It was a tough field. The structure was incredible at Borgata. They usually have one of the better structures. It kind of fell apart down the stretch. We got down nine-handed, and average stack was only 20 big blinds. So that was kind of a letdown there, because the structure had been so good to begin with. You know, that I'd like to see it at least around 30 to 40 big blinds for the average stack and give us a little more play. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it was, I felt like I played a really great tournament. You know, I mentioned how I'd been running bad, and I, my last column was about misery loving company and the bad beats and all that. And it's really, I mean, it's really how, you know, I feel sometimes. And I think a lot of people don't realize that they are in the same company of every other poker player, and everybody thinks they run worse than everybody else. And I was just talking to a buddy, Jeff, who runs Bust Out Poker, that we'll talk about, you know, and he's describing what he's going through, and he's just describing my life on a daily basis. You know, I mean, it's really funny. You know, every time I have ace king, they got ace jack and they get there, you know, and I mean, it's just what I feel like happens every time. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'd been in kind of a bad run. I was really discouraged. I'd been up there for about a week, ended up actually playing online a lot because I think the WCOOP was going on at the time, and was running pretty bad. And then with running bad, I think, you know, playing bad can come along with that, and you may not catch that. So I ended up skipping one of the events because the 1500, because I had a charity golf tournament that Saturday. And I knew if I made a run, it would go to the wee hours of Saturday morning. So I decided, you know, talked to Jenny and decided to come on back home. Spent Friday with Braden and just hung out, played golf, beautiful weather on Saturday. And got up Sunday morning, which was the day 1B, the second day, starting day, and drove back up to Borgata. And when I was driving up, I honestly can't remember the last time I was so excited to actually play just from having a few days off, you know, because you guys know I grind a lot. I play a lot online and put in a really high volume of tournaments. So, you know, when you're putting in that high volume, the beats and everything can take a toll. And I think I usually handle them better than a lot of people do, but because you just see them so much, you have to. But I've never had more fun playing a tournament. I mean, the main event in 07, I had a lot of fun. It was my first time playing a big event, but this time I talked more at the table. I joked around. I think I was tilting people because I was just so happy-go-lucky most of the time. And, you know, it was a really fun tournament. I ran well. I think I played some of the best poker I've played. But, you know, and I had one spot. You know, I remember people always like to talk about their suckouts, where they get sucked out on. So I'll talk about when I sucked out on people. You know, like I had a monster pot, guy opens, I shove ace king. It was kind of a standard play with our stacks and position. He beats me in the pot with two kings. And I say, well, that's okay. The ace of hearts is coming, and the ace of diamonds flops. And I say, oh, damn. And like the whole table looks at me like I'm nuts.
Hey, Liv, verbal's binding, so you screwed yourself.
Liv Busquet is there. You know, he won the event before back in January. And he looked at me like I was just had lost my mind. And then I apologized to the guy that was in the hand with. And I'm like, sorry, man, I'm just having some fun. He's like, hey, it's no big deal. Like, he, you know, he got it. It was just a standard play. You know, and I had another one where I had like second pair and thought a guy was weak and moved in, and he was not weak. He had pocket queens and had an overpair to the board, and I ran out of full house.
Wow.
You know, and so those were a couple of key hands, and obviously there was a lot of hands that, you know, I had the stack to survive from other plays, but so it wasn't really a tourney filled with just getting lucky, but you know, it was nice to be on the other end of those things, because I felt like, you know, I'd been through so much of it where those kinds of things were happening to me. And, you know, it came together at the right time. It was the largest WPT field ever. It was a $3,500 buy-in.
Right.
Not a 10K, but it was the largest field ever. So it was cool to make that final table. And, you know, the final table, it was kind of some standard stuff. You know, a player open shoved, and I had two jacks. So I called, and he had ace three and binked them both. So instead of eliminating him, I doubled him, and then I fought my way back up, basically doubled without a showdown, but I had a couple of hands where I had monsters and shoved over the top of raises. And with our stacks, the players should have been calling. They just, you know, when you're sitting there with 15, 20 big blinds, if somebody opens and you shove, they're supposed to know that they're going to call. And, you know, and I had queens once and kings once and didn't get those calls. And then eventually I shoved nines from the cutoff and ran into tens on the button. So, you know, just a cooler there. But, you know, I can't complain. You know, I had a couple of lucky hands to stay alive and then did what I could from there. But it was a fun tournament. It was a super strong field down the stretch. I knew a lot of the guys. Mike Sexton made it deep. So it should be good TV because Mike will be on there and they have the what they call them, the Royal Flush Girls, and everybody's singing happy birthday to him. And I think he went out somewhere just before the final table in the teens, I think. So it was a good tournament.
Well, you mentioned how the structures got gnarly towards the end, and I was watching the live chip updates then, and I think it was actually even gnarlier than you admitted. I think you're probably being a little polite there. I mean, the average you said was like 20 big blinds, but even the chip leader didn't have much more than 20 big blinds at that point.
No, that's true. Yeah, it was. That's right. I mean, the average stack that there was, because there were several smaller stacks, and you know where, you know, people in the 10 to 15 big blind range. So I think the chip leader may have had 25 or 30, if that. Yeah. So it was pretty tough, you know, because it does. You know, and I mean, that's been something that's been going on for a while. They have to, you know, and I know there's been a lot of complaints about some of the final table structures, and all that, where there's just not that much play when it comes down to the big money jumps. And, you know, you get all that play early on, which is great. I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to see that change.
Yeah.
But, you know, it allows you to get those chips. But yeah, it's tough when it comes down to just basically a shove fest, and disappointing when you shove with something good and they don't make those calls. I mean, I'm happy to risk taking a beat there. You know, and that said, it's good to pick up a pot without a showdown. But you know, those are spots when you got somebody opening and supposed to call you, and you have two kings. Like, I'll take the risk of losing that hand to try to get this
right. Well, so, you know, then you follow that up with a six-figure payday for F-tops in the main event. Do you feel like you're playing the best poker of your life now? And then I have a follow-up question that I'd have to answer that.
Yeah, I really think I am. I've had several points along the way where I think I've hit little milestones in my poker game. And I came back from Borgata and actually had a nice run online. The rest of September had quite a few nice hits, you know, nothing that big, but was actually making money, which was good. And then it kind of tailed off and was going back the other way. But, you know, and that happens sometimes when you're working on your game. And I have been making some adjustments to my game, to basically things that'll help me. It'll honestly help me cash, you know, less often, but cash deeper. And that's what you really want to do when you're playing a bunch of tournaments, or when you're playing any tournaments. I mean, you don't want to be min cashing over and over. So these things have been working. I feel like I'm just executing a lot of things better with you know, position and pot control and things that we've talked about over and over. You guys know I went on taught on a poker cruise and spent about a week teaching and talking poker. And usually after I do that, I find that I usually have some kind of run after that, which makes perfect sense. sitting there, you know, yelling at people and telling them all the stupid things they're doing. And so I have to stop myself from doing those same things. And, you know, it was about 2 weeks after that we had that was the F-Tops main event. So, you know, I'm really happy with both of those because, you know, at Borgata, I actually finished 14th back in January in that same event, and then finished 9th. And then I don't know, maybe 3 or 4, I don't know how many F-tops ago. It seems like there's about 10 a year, but there was I finished 11th one time in the main and really, really dumped off my chips. It was pretty heartbreaking. I made a big mistake and gave my chips to the guy who went on to win it and win $400,000. So, so it was nice to get a little better, you know, and that was another big example. Like, you know, I talk about running bad and losing all these flips, losing all the 70-30s and 80-20s for big pots. And this tournament, they just were all falling into place. It was like I was being paid back. And I think that's the, you know, the lesson in it is sticking with it, because those things do have to turn around, and hopefully you see it, you know, because it's a long-term thing, and you just hope that that long-term shows up in your relatively short-term. But, you know, I had, you know, I was the guy with ace-king against pocket nines and turning an ace, and I had ace-king beat ace-king. I had ace-king beat kings, you know, and, you know, and then I just had hands hold where I had the pairs against the ace-king or ace-queen, and I would hold. And so I was, you know, I was winning. I won a bunch of flips on both sides, and just had a real nice run. We got down. I was second with five or six to go. I think I was still second with five to go, and was actually waiting for one more to bust out before talking chop with the guys. And unfortunately, it was me. I raised kings. You know, we're only five handed, and I got kings. I raised them, and the big blind re-raises me. So playing five-handed, I prefer to just flat him here, because if I four-bet it, he's just going to fold almost everything. And, you know, there's something to be said for picking up those chips, but that's an aspect of my game that I've been trying to work on, like not being scared of getting those big hands cracked, because you want to get action from those hands, and you have to take those risks sometimes. And it's not really slow playing. Like, I don't advocate slow playing the hands, but it's about how, you know, what's the best way to maximize your value. And if I just shove there, he's going to fold, you know, almost everything. And flop came queen high. It was like queen six rag. And we ended up getting the money in. And unfortunately, he was making a play with queen six. So, you know, it's a beat, but, you know, I can't complain about it. You know, it's just it kind of played out the way that it had to. And there's not much I could have done about it with those stacks. I wasn't getting away from the kings on that flop, so.
The other question I wanted to ask you was, you know, you admit that you're probably playing the best you've ever played, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago, 2007, you make the main event final table, and essentially between endorsements and the money you got and everything, you know, you make $1 million. It opens up a whole new world for you, basically fulfills a lot of people's kind of dreams where they love to play poker for a living. So now you're playing the best poker of your life because you're allowed to play at these levels and with this, you know, this kind of money and those kinds of buy-ins. Do you feel like if you can go back in time now as the player you are and get to that final table again, do you feel like you could win that final table, or what would you have done differently other than probably folding the queens? I mean, you know, but I mean, really though, really, I mean,
zing!
What do you think about? I don't mean that as an insult. I'm just saying, what would you have done differently, and do you think you could have taken that table down now, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I feel like, you know, I don't think I was the best player at that final table, but I still think I could have taken it down even then. And so, yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, the other thing is you'd have the opportunity to, you know, with the way the November 9 is now and having the delay and all that time off, and you get to watch the broadcast and everything, that certainly helps. You know, it was funny. I went on Bernard Lee and I were on with John Friedberg on his show, Under the Gun, his internet show, and he asked us both. It was a segment. He was basically talking to us about amateurs having a deep run in the main event, and it was just before the main event last year. And you know, he asked us if we knew what we knew now about the game, do we think we make that deep of a run? And we both said no.
Yeah,
like, you know, because I think that I probably, you know, I would have had to have more luck in a way to make it, because I would have made more moves. I would have had my chips in the middle more often. And I was just talking with Jeff yesterday about how, you know, I was all in and covered twice in 07 in the main event. That's it.
Wow.
And the first one was day one, aces against aces. And the last one was my king jack against Jerry's jack eight. So, you know, I think at that final table, I might have played the queen's hand differently. I might, you know, having seen some of the plays that Jerry made with being able to see his cards earlier in the tournament, I might have re-raised him with the queens. but I still made just flat there. You know, I mean, we were nine hands in, and it's the biggest stage in poker. You know, and I've got 15 people that just flew across the country, and I, you know, was in a spot that I think I'd probably still flat, and then I probably check the flop, and if he insta shoves, I call. Yeah. If he takes his time and really thinks out a calculating bet, then I may still get away from the hand, just because. And I know we've talked about it, but I, you know, the range. I really thought he had jacks plus or ace king, and if he has those hands, as long as it's not queens, which I got to rule out, then if it's ace king of clubs, aces or kings, then I'm in a flip or crushed. And jacks was the only hand that I was in good shape against, except for the fact that Jerry has a knack for turning cards that help him win. So I think it's still a good laydown. But I've always said, you know, I regret calling with the king jack, even though I had him dominated, more than I regret laying down the queens. I think I could have waited for a better spot, because if I'd have folded that king jack, we were going up on the break. I was going to have the button, and I still had 30 big blinds. So I think that's a spot with my game now. I would say it's not worth it. I know he can have any two random cards, but I may not be that big of a favorite. So I probably actually fold that hand. And it's funny because people think that's the great call and that the queens is the bad laydown. But really, my opinion right now, I think it's kind of the opposite. But yeah, I mean, skill wise, I wouldn't say I'm the best out of that group. I'm never going to put myself above Alex Kravchenko. But I think out of the rest of the group, I'd feel pretty good about my game. And I mean, Havad's obviously a really great player. But I definitely like my chances.
Okay.
Well, obviously you're very good at, the online game, Lee. And last week's show, we talked about the last-ditch efforts in Congress to regulate online poker, and that it might involve a 15-month cooling-off period with no online poker. We're taping this show in advance, so the whole point might be moot by the time people hear this interview. But if that happens, if there's 15 months of not playing online, what kind of effect will that have on you, and what kind of effect do you think it's going to have on other pros?
I get to stand up from my chair once in a while. This is cool. Drop this 10 to 15 pounds I think I've gained since the baby was born. There's some positives, I think, for me personally. I've been really thinking about this lately, obviously, with it going on, because, you know, a lot of people think it's just the most awful thing. I think long term it's probably really good. It obviously, if that's the sacrifice we have to make to get it legalized and regulated, I mean, that's the end goal. So if there has to be some kind of compromise and sacrifice, then I think I'd just have to side with it. Not that I have a choice, but I think it's okay, you know, because if we can get it legalized and regulated, I think that'll open it up.
And
sorry about the dog. Hey, buddy.
What's the dog's name?
Copper.
Copper, yeah. Go fetch.
He's put on at least 15 since the baby was born. I think it'll open it up to where, you know, we'll get some fish back in the game. You know, the ponds will be replenished, and I think that'll really help. There will still be the sources to play as far as some of the free sites and whatever. I mean, to be honest, I haven't looked into every little detail, but I think there's some advantages. I know for me personally, there's some advantages of, you know, just lifestyle wise, I, you know, will get more sleep, and it'll require a little more travel because I'll want to be playing some more live events. But, you know, usually in the first 6 months of the year, I've got quite a few live events that I'm going to play anyway. So there's, you know, 1 or 2 months in there that, maybe about a month and a half that I put a lot of online time in, and then with the summer out at the World Series, and then the fall, there's, you know, usually I put a pretty high volume in online. So, you know, which might explain some my December runs the past couple of years, just having so much time practicing and playing online. But, you know, I think it's good. I know a lot of people are going to be upset. There's a lot of kids that, you know, that are playing, and they're their sole income is from playing online, and some of them aren't old enough to play in the casinos. So, you know, it's certainly detrimental to them, but maybe they'll finish school and you know, get a degree or whatever, you know, and it might be good for them to be doing something else with their lives for a little while. Because I know a lot of these people, you know, kids have started when they were in high school and they're playing through college or just playing and not even going to college. So that's all they're doing is playing online day after day after day. So we may have maybe next year at the PCA and there won't be as many pasty little kids running around. So, you know, I think lifestyle wise, it's some good stuff. And I think it'll be good long term for the game.
You know, the ramifications of this thing, too. I mean, you think about all the Team Pro deals that PokerStars has or Full Tilt, all these deals that people have, and for a year and a half, they're not going to be able to play on these sites, and a lot of them rely on income as well, from even from the hourly rate that they get for being a pro. You know what I mean? It's just the ramifications is so far-reaching. It's
ridiculous. Oh, yes. And I mean, in the rake back that they're getting. And,
yeah.
You know, and just for anybody. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that play, and they grind. I mean, they just grind 8-10 plus tables, and they're basically playing for rake back. You know, they don't care if they even make a profit because they're getting so much rake back. You know, they generate a lot of money. And so that's just, you know, for the people that are doing that, that's going to be gone. But I thought about that too with those, with all the sponsored pros. It's really going to impact them because they're used to some pretty hefty paychecks. Now, I don't know what the big sites are going to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, if a poker pro is wearing your patch in a tournament in the woods and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? You know what I mean? It's like if no one can see you playing, and why would you wear a patch if it doesn't promote, you know, the site can't do anything for 3 years on that site? Or, you know, it's just, wow, it really is going to be, I think it's going to be a debacle if it went through or whatever. But, all right, let's move on to happier things. Next month, in Annie Up, you're writing a column for us on tournament travel. We're having a special edition on traveling to different rooms around the country and why you should go there. And your column is going to focus on tips, basically on how to prepare to travel and to play in these tournaments. You want to give me a little taste about, you know, what you recommended?
Yeah, you just have your people take care of all that stuff for you. You know, I call up Scott and say, hey, dude, I'm going to AC next week. Book everything for me. Get my tee time set up. Get my...
Does Chris get to carry your bag this tournament, or is it my turn?
It's your turn this time.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's about, I don't go too much on like booking the travel and stuff. Everybody's got their own ways of booking, whether, you know, it's using, you know, some of the sites like Expedia or Travelodge, whatever the hot sites are now. So if you're, you know, if you're traveling by plane and whatever, whether it's a plane, train or automobile, you know, you can figure that out yourself, I think. I'm certainly no travel expert or travel agent. What's that?
You're not a Travelocity garden gnome, are you?
That's right. No. So, you know, but you know, the thing is, it's about, you know, looking, you know, calling the hotel or casino. If you're going to stay at the casino, you know, making sure you're checking on the poker rates. Usually there's some kind of rates, you know, making sure you're playing with the players' cards, to get your comps, because those things can really add up. Make sure I should mention this, maybe you can throw it in there, Chris, about, when you do give your card, when you start playing, make sure that you swipe out, which is what I always forget to do.
So, I
don't have this tip in there, but one thing I know some people do is they go and swipe in and then go to breakfast and hang out and do whatever they want and then come back and play a little bit and then go have dinner and then come back. You know, they may play a few hours and then they log in about 12 hours in the poker room magically. You know, and then, you know, and then other things about just, you know, finding out what else there is to do in the area. You know, if you're going to have some kind of extended trip and have time to, you know, see, you know, you're traveling somewhere. So make sure you're seeing some of the sites and finding out like where the good places are to eat, like the must do places. And you know, those kinds of things can really help the experience a lot. And it's something that I haven't really done until recently. I've just always been playing, you know, and it's nice to have some of that time. And, you know, this summer I got a little taste of that, having Jenny and Braden out there with me, and I'd have some days off and we'd go to some different places and it was nice to do that. So,
all right, well, Great, Lee. And in news hot off the presses, you reached a deal with the Bust Out Poker clothing line. Yep. I got to ask you, how cool is it to be good-looking enough to pull off wearing hip clothes? you know, my phone isn't exactly ringing off the hook with clothing endorsement deals.
Yeah, I don't really know that it has anything to do with looks. it's just the charming personality, I think. I met these guys through some mutual friends back in, you know, at the end of last year, I guess it was, or some, maybe early this year, down in Tunica, and have stayed in touch. He had given me, you know, a couple of free shirts, and you know, and then so I've been wearing them. But they've got a good team. A couple of the guys that I know real well that have been online grinders for a while, real tough, solid players. You know, Chad Brown's one of the guys on the team now. Will Souther, Monkey, who you guys may know, he's pretty popular down in the South, especially. Good guy, crazy guy, a lot of fun. So there's, you know, there's a lot of good folks on the team, and Jeff and his wife Nikki, who are building the company, are, you know, really looking. They're really trying to focus on like good, solid people. I guess is if you're not super
but
ugly.
You slipped yourself in anyway.
Yeah, I did. You know, I somehow got in there. And you know, he had given me, like I said, a couple of shirts, and then I've, you know, I wear them all the time. And you know, he said, well, let me see. Like, he actually didn't, you know, he wasn't sure if I'd be interested in joining the team. And I was all over it. I mean, he's got some big plans other than just the clothing line, and he's got a bunch of really cool stuff. And it's really neat to hear, like, just talking with Jeff about it, like what he puts into the designs and how much thought goes into the design of these t-shirts. You know, they're very high end, real high quality shirts. And there's, you know, there's hoodies and all kinds of other gear and stuff too. But these, like the shirts, the designs are amazing. And, you know, each shirt has a name and a purpose. And there's like, just, I don't know. It's just really cool to hear him talk about it. It's like there's children referring to all his shirts by name. And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, I saw you wearing this shirt, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I saw you wearing the Predator. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? You know, but it's, yeah, it's a really great group. I think, they've just signed some other folks as well. And, a couple guys from overseas and from the UK, and I'm really happy to be part of the group, and I'll definitely be sporting my bust out shirts. I expect to get some more gear tomorrow so I can take them with me up to AC for the circuit. I'll be going up there.
I'll be sure they're packed in your bag.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right. Well, what about your own company there? What's new with Acumen Poker Training, and are we going to finally be able to land you in Acumen Poker on any of our Ante Up cruises in 2011?
Yeah, talk to Scott. I haven't. You know, I haven't done a lot of. I haven't really done any group sessions. I did. I mentioned going on a cruise. I did the World Poker Tour Amateur Poker League cruise, which was a blast. We went on a 7-day cruise out of Miami. Eric Risen Lynch was on the cruise with me. The two of us did instruction for like an hour and maybe a couple hours pretty much every day, and played in their tournaments and all this stuff, and just had a really great time. It was an awesome group. And that's the second time I've done one of these cruises, and I really enjoyed the other one. The other one was with the All In Free Poker guys, which I think you know Brian and those guys down there.
Right.
I love doing the cruises. Jenny loves the cruises. Like I said, I haven't done anything specifically group session wise. I'm working with quite a few individual students right now, as I can. And, I am trying to find a window where I can do a group session coming up soon. During this cruise, right afterwards, Jenny and I were talking about, that, you know, maybe that was a good kind of niche to get on. And you know, it's such a good venue because everybody's there and in a central location, not too far apart. So you can have lots of different sessions at different times, and then everybody's in there playing, and, you know, you get to go and play with the group. And it's a really good time, and we did some excursions with the group and all that stuff. So it's a good time to kind of get close and personal with everybody and talk a lot of strategy and get to play some real games. Played cash games and tournaments with them. So absolutely, I'd love to do one or many if we can work it out. I know I've talked with Scott a little bit about it. And so hopefully either the August or December cruise of this year, we'll have that all figured out. You know, I definitely, hopefully, if, you know, the folks that are listening, people that have any interest, you know, I'd like to kind of brainstorm with you guys on how we set that up and what kind of sessions we put together. But I think people get a lot of value out of it. And, you know, one thing about training, you know, a lot of people think they know it all, and, you know, there's people in every group that don't really see the need for it. Even that last cruise, some people that didn't come to the sessions and they don't want to spend that money. But, you know, even if you spent like $200 on one class, if you play 1-2 poker, that's one buy-in. And I guarantee you, if you spend one buy-in on a few hours of training, you're going to way more than recoup that cost in no time,
right?
You know, and it's, you know, it's just, it's silly not to take advantage of that, those things. I can promise you that you're going to learn something. And there's the discussions we had on that last cruise were just phenomenal. We had different sessions with different topics, and we'd always get on tangents into other topics. I know it's hard to believe I might get on a tangent talking about talking about poker strategy, but the discussions were just unbelievable. And a couple of the times we had both Eric and myself in the same session, and so we had a lot of back and forth. And you know, it's always cool when you have somebody like Eric who's got such a great reputation, and after I finish saying something, he says, "Well, I agree with everything Lee said," and then maybe add something. So it's nice to have that little validation coming from a guy
just
who
like Chris and me.
Yeah, we always agree.
Right. And you know, Scott, how it makes you just feel warm and fuzzy when Scott agrees with you that you know you must be right if Chris is agreeing with you.
Quite the honest, I think he gets horrified.
Okay, well, now comes the longest portion of our show, the hand of the week.
Let's do it.
All right, our hand this week is from an online site not affiliated with Anti-Up. It is a, how should we say this, Chris, a very quick format of poker.
Oh, not again.
Is that probably the best way we can do it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had to pick this because last time we had Lee on for the hand of the week, that hand of the week lasted for 4 or 5 days, right?
Yeah. We got to have a quick hand for Lee this
time. So, yeah. So if we, you know, breeze through it, then maybe we'll have a better chance of finishing this show before the World Series next year. All right. Submitted by our new friend Steve Calmy from Las Vegas. Goes by Slick Sly Spy. And, you know, I got to ask this. Folks that live in Las Vegas, they play online?
Oh, yeah.
You've got like 90 poker rooms out there to choose from. You're really that lazy? You can't put some clothes on?
Can't play as quickly, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a format.
I guarantee you there's a lot of people sitting in Tennessee right now that would like to switch spots with Slick Sly Spy here and be able to go out and play live.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we're playing at the nickel-dime blind level of this breezy poker game on this other site. And our hero started with $8 and had won a little. He's up to 1084. And he's in the big blind, and it's folded all the way around to the small blind, who has 1870, so has this covered. And min raises to 20 cents. We look down at King of Diamonds, 10 of Hearts. And before we get going, Lee, I know, you play this breezy format, I imagine, at some point, right?
Yeah, occasionally. Yep.
Any specific tips on that format before we...
As it relates to this particular hand, I think no, because we're just at a blind versus blind situation. But I will say that from what I have played, and I've played, you know, the highest they have is the $2, $4. I play 1-2 and 2-4. It's a super tough game. You know, something just quickly to keep in mind, or should I talk real fast and then maybe we'll get through this real quickly? You got to remember that the online stakes, you know, play almost like a factor of five bigger. So if you're playing 1-2, it's like a 5-10 live, and you know, 2-4 is like a 10-20 or 10-25 live. So you're playing against really, really good players if you get up there in those higher stakes. So if you're used to playing 1-2, you should definitely be playing down here at the, you know, 5-10, 10-25, or 25-50 at the most, I think. So, you know, definitely play lower. I played a little bit higher volume of it recently, and I think it's helped my game because it's helped me get away from some big hands. I find that there's a lot of times, you know, just quick example, you know, like having a hand like pocket aces and getting called and three rags come, getting any kind of action on that flop, I find they almost always have two pair a set. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes you've got the coordinated board. Now, the lower stakes you play, you might have people chasing a lot more often, but I find people playing very close to the vest as far as the odds go. They're not chasing a lot of draws. They're flopping monsters or getting onto the next hand. And that's the thing about this speedy format is you can really play, you know, you play the game for that two pair better that we always talk about, or just go on. Like, you don't have to run a bunch of big bluffs and do all these things that I don't really recommend in cash games anyway. But, you know, I've found, you know, where when I go from tournament to playing this, you know, I've gotten myself caught because I'm trying to win pots and I'm trying to accumulate chips. And instead of always being disciplined about just looking to flop monsters or just get out. So I find if I have a one pair kind of hand and I'm getting a lot of action, it rings even more true that they've actually really outflopped me. And so it's better to just fold. And so I've gotten really good about folding, you know, over pairs on the flop or even the turn and just saying, you know what, it's not worth it because they probably really do have a monster here. You know, and I think that, you know, I mean, for me, I mean, I play super tight. I try to see flops just like any cash game. I try to see flops with any pairs. And then if I've got the right price, you know, suited connectors and stuff in position. And then, of course, my big hands. But, you know, you got to remember when people are raising up front, they almost always have a big hand. So with your opponents knowing that, if you're getting significant action, just be really cautious with your big hands because it's really easy to get stacked. If you don't let them, you know, if you don't get away from them when you're getting that resistance. I think that's the biggest thing. And it's really helped my tournament game to just get away from hands on the turn and on the river. When it's just the betting story really tells you that you're more likely beat than not. So you're going to fold some winners every once in a while, but more often than not, you're going to save yourself a lot of money.
Excellent advice. All right, well, as we mentioned, the small blind is folded on the small blind, who min-raised to 20 cents. We have King of Diamonds, 10 of Hearts. I'm guessing by what you just said that this is a hand that we probably should let go and wait for the next one, or do we take a dime flyer here and see whether we can outflop them?
I call. I'm giving you the quick answer. Yeah, I call here. you're actually priced in to call with any two cards here, right? You're getting 3-1 on your money pre-flop. You're going to be in position. You know, you don't have to call with just complete rags, but technically by the math of the game, you're priced in to call with absolutely any two cards, and you might as well take a flop and try to catch two pair or better, you know, or, you know, catch your king, catch your 10, if it's the high card on the board, and try to play a relatively small pot. You're going to be in position so you can control the size of the pot. I'm definitely calling here. There's no real reason to re-raise here because if you raise, then if it becomes over the top, you're just going to be throwing that money away. So I'm happy to just call and take the flop in position here. I don't need, you know, in a tournament, I'm a little more inclined to raise to go ahead and take the pot down, especially if there's andes and stuff. But cash game here, I'll just call and take this flop in position against the guy.
I'm just going to continue to let Lee go first and then agree with him the whole way. I mean, who am I to argue with a guy who just won six figures on F-Tops and made the final table of World Poker Tour? So I'm just going to sit here and agree everything. So I agree.
Yeah,
let's call on.
But here's the thing. Our listeners really enjoy when you guys expand out the pre-flop action with amazingly detailed minutia.
Hey, let's just call and see a flop. What's the flop, Scott?
All right, maybe we'll make the flop the extended discussion on this one. How about that? Mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, well, our hero does call, and we see a flop of King of Hearts, 7 of Spades, 10 of Spades, 38 cents in the pot, and the small blind opens for 40 cents.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
Yeah, it's my line that I stole.
From Mike Sexton, right?
Yeah, I stole it. I stole it.
Yeah, right. He took it from you.
38, all right, so we're facing a pot size bet with top two.
I'm raising. You know, when you flop your hand, you want to raise. You want to, you know, you don't want to slow play this. I'm not scared of the spades. We're heads up blind versus blind. there, you know, sure, he can have the two spades, but just don't be scared of these flush draws. I'm more scared about the flush coming and killing my action. You know, sure, he could have kings, sevens, or tens. He could, you know, be ahead, but it's very unlikely that he's got those hands. But that's going to happen from time to time. He could have a monster spade draw. Again, less likely. You know, the guy should be betting 100% of the time here, and the fact that he bets out the pot, it more likely indicates to me that he's hit it and he's ready to take the pot down now. So maybe he is scared of the spades. So you know, maybe he's flopped the king or the ten. I see people sometimes with second pair make these kind of bets because you know, if I were to bet with a 10 here and bet the pot and you come over the top, I can be confident that my 10's not really good. So it kind of helps me make that decision to fold a little easier because you shouldn't be able to raise unless you probably had a big spade draw. You know, and if you've got, like, say, ace, jack, of spades, you got the two overs and flush draw, you're a little bit of a favorite anyway. So plus you'd have a gut shot to go with it. So I think I would raise here, and I'd raise, like, probably three times his bet, so to like $1.20.
I agree.
You guys are so boring.
But I really do agree. That's the thing.
Why you gotta lump me in with that?
I do. I agree, though. I mean, I agree. I don't know what else to say here. I mean, it would be stupid to bet more, and it would be stupid to just call. And you know, you're given ace, queen of spades, unlimited. You know, letting him set the price, and if he has ace, king, you've got him trapped. So, I mean. Yeah. I agree. I mean, that's perfect. That's what I would do. I would do 3x what he bets, so 120.
And the thing is, it's really important to know that we're not raising because we're scared of the flush. We're raising. We don't want the flush to kill our action, and we don't want to give him correct odds to draw if he is drawing. We don't know if he's drawing, so we can't make a bet to try to specifically, you know, price him out of it. We don't know what his two cards are, so we just want to make our standard raise, and I would raise it up like my good friend Chris said, to $1.20.
Now, I don't want to get us off track on this hand, but...
I will,
absolutely. you talk about looking for weaknesses in your game all the time, Lee, and this is certainly a weakness of mine when we get heads up with the two blinds, and I think it's probably a weakness in a lot of people's games. Are there any general tips on blind versus blind action? I mean, generally, you're thinking that no one has anything when you're in the blinds. And just trying to steal from each other, but is it more of a game of chicken usually, or is that oversimplifying?
Sometimes, yeah. I was gonna steal a line. I'm trying to remember who it was from, but Nikki Numbers was talking to somebody during one of the events out at the series this summer, and he was a high stakes limit player online, and you know, and he was asking him about it, and basically his advice was just keep clicking the button on the right. And so, you know, that's, you know, there is a lot of that where it's just bet, raise, you know, and you just, that's the way those guys play. And that's, it can be very profitable. It's hard to keep calling bets and raise all the way down to the river. So there's an element to that. There's also an element with not going crazy and just donking off money. I mean, you've got, you're playing a cash game here. You know, there's no reason to make all these risky plays just to accumulate chips. You want to apply pressure. You want to stay aggressive, but not blind aggression. And here you got a hand. I mean, this is a flop. You know, if you abandoned this hand, it would just be awful. You should never call with king 10 to begin with if you're going to get away from a king 7-10 flop. So that's just what you're looking for. So, yeah, you know, a lot of things with heads up. You know, any pair is usually pretty good, and if you have a pair that's maybe in the hole, that's the second pair compared to what's on the board. Certainly, if you flop top pair, it's, you know, it's worth at least trying to get to showdown. But you still have to be cognizant of what's going on with the betting and what your opponent's telling you, because they're looking at the same board you are, and if they're willing to put in a lot of chips, then they probably got you beat. And if not, then they bluff you once in a while, and that's okay.
All right. Well, you mentioned that we should raise to $1.20. Our hero makes it just 80 cents, and the small blind re-raises them to $1.20. So we've all of a sudden switched to limit poker here. So what do we do now?
I think I might just call in this spot. It's, you know, I don't necessarily want to just play for stacks at this point. He's really indicating that he's got something. It's now looking like he's trying to suck me in, really. This isn't looking that scared of the flush draw. So I'd probably call. He may have the flush draw himself, and he's trying to make it look like he's flopped a set. He may have flopped a set. It's unlikely he has another two pair. And it could be, you know, that's the thing. You don't know for sure, but it also could be just, let me see where I'm at. You know, is this guy just min-raising me because we're blind versus blind? So let me see if this guy's really got a hand. I've made bets like that where I try to make it look super strong by raising smaller, because it's highly likely that the big blind is just making a play at this, this pot by raising here. I don't know that it really defines his hand, but, it makes it look like it makes it look a little bit stronger, keeping in mind it could be the, let me see if you've really got something here.
All right, let me ask you this, Lee. I don't mean to jump in here, but you sounded a little defeatist when you said, all right, I'm going to call here. What are we looking for on the turn? Because it sounds like we're uncertain of where we stand now.
Yeah, we are uncertain, and the reason I'm saying that and the way it's kind of like because I want to build a pot, but it gives me a little caution that he's only re-min-raised me. Like I said, it could be that he actually did flop a monster hand here, and with us having King 10, the other monsters are the sets, or a monster draw. Maybe it's the Queen Jack of Spades or 8-9 of Spades, something like that. You know, so he could have a really strong hand. And he could just be like an Ace King. So I think the thing is we've narrowed it down to kind of a little stronger raise. I mean, a little stronger range of hands that he probably has. And so I want to exercise a little bit of pot control here. Flopping the two pair, I'm usually willing to get the money in. When somebody's trying to tell me through the betting that they've actually flopped pretty big too, or the betting kind of, it's one of these things where the betting might be saying that. So I want to proceed with a little bit of caution and just try to control the size of the pot, you know, and if a spade comes, or the straight gets there, then I have no problem letting go of my hand, whether or not he's got the flush or, had a straight draw. I don't really care. I mean, I'm not looking to go broke at this point, or to play for all the chips when he has a raise amount here that is potentially indicating a monster.
This is me biting my tongue. I'm just going to say that I agree.
I thought you were going to disagree and get the chips in.
No, I mean, I was going to ask you what the call really does for us. What are we trying to accomplish by calling? And then you said you wanted to control the pot a little. So I guess I kind of understand it there. I just, like you said before, there's really just three hands that beat us, and all three are unlikely. So, I mean, if he had aces, we got him crushed unless a seven or, seven comes. So, if he had, like you said, if he had kings or sevens or tens, which is very unlikely because the case card had to come out for the tens or the kings, I don't know. I understand that he's trying to tell you that, but that min raise by him could mean a lot of things, couldn't it? Other than just saying I've hit it huge.
Yeah, I'm saying. I don't know if it's a feeler kind of min raise or if it's the monster hand. But here's the key. This is one of those spots where I think you're way ahead or way behind.
Right.
And like you said, it's unlikely you're way behind, but it's possible. So the thing is, when you're way ahead or way behind, if you raise here, he's likely going to just fold all the weaker hands.
Okay.
If he's got, if he's got a flush draw, then he's probably going to come along, but you can abandon your hand if the flush gets there. You know, it's, he's probably going to call all in with his flush draw, so you might be able to get him to make a mistake. But if he's a good player and you were to come back over the top and price him out of his flush draw, then he should fold. Okay. So, you know, if you come back over the top and he has a draw, then you're pricing him out. If you get him to call on that draw, that's a good thing, whether he hits or not. You know, and that's the important thing, if you get him to make a mistake. So you are opening up a little bit of risk. If he has a draw, you just let him, you know, kind of reset that price a little cheaper. I mean, you made it pretty cheap by just min raising anyway. So he could have, if he had the draw, he should just call, in my opinion. But, you know, it's, if he's got you beat, then he's got you beat pretty bad right now. If he doesn't have you beat, then he's drawing pretty thin. And, you know, and we'll see, you know, what happens on the turn. If the spade gets there and he still comes back into action, then I think it's more likely he did have the flush draw and we can get away from it. You know, if there's no spade, you know, and he's either way, if he's still like really strong, I mean, I'm not folding the hand on the turn. I'm not planning to fold it, but maybe if a spade comes and he bets the pot again, then I probably just let it go because it's more likely, and especially if it's a spade and a Broadway card.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, our hero says he's pretty sure his opponent has two spades, probably the ace. And he says, but like an idiot, I call. So, Slick, be happy. Lee would have called. So you're not an idiot unless you're calling Lee an idiot. And I'm not going to stand by and let you call my good friend Lee an idiot.
Yeah, Slick.
But he says, looking back, if that's what he put him on, I should have shoved. And what you're saying, Lee, is if you do put him on that and you shove, you really got to hope that he calls or it's a bad play. Is that correct?
Right. Exactly. I don't want to go on too long with it, but
yeah, you had him saying exactly, Scott. You shouldn't have pushed it any further.
No, but I mean, the key, and I mean, I just think it's important because a lot of people miss that. Like, a lot of people are making that raise to get the flush draw to fold, and so if you make that big raise and you price him out of his draw and he folds, you helped him make a correct decision. If you make a shove and he still calls with his draw and paying the wrong price, then that's profit for you whether he hits or not. And it's really important to have those concepts. It makes it much easier to deal with the bad beats too when they get there, because that's the whole key to the game and your betting amounts. So by calling here, you're now basically you're willing to try to play a smaller pot unless you improve. And if the flush gets there and he's still showing that he really likes this board, then you just let the hand go and just give him credit for the hand he's representing. So, but it's really important not to be shoving because you're scared of the flush draw.
Right.
That's a huge mistake that the majority of players make.
Excellent. All right, well, the turn is what he called a horrible card, the six of spades. So our board now is king of hearts, seven of spades, ten of spades, six of spades. And if our villain did have spades, obviously he got there. The pot is at 262 now, but the small blind checks to us.
I'm checking here. I'm checking here 100% of the time.
Yeah, me
this
too.
This is why I called. I want to check back the turn now, because now, regardless of what comes on the river, if it's another spade and he fires, I'm probably going to let it go. Almost any other card on the river, if he fires, unless he does like one of those overshove things, we'll have to evaluate what happens there. But now I've set myself up. I've got control of this pot. The board got worse for me. I flopped what I consider a monster. The board did get worse. But now this is why I'm playing in position. This is why I just called on the turn. On the flop, so that I can check back this turn now. And my hand is now a bluff catcher unless I improve and get a king or a 10. All I have is a bluff catching hand. And like, say, if he were to bet here, that bet may be the same amount that the villain is going to fire on the river. So by just calling then on the river, we're getting to showdown for the same price that I could be betting here on the turn. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm also opening it up. If he's got the flush and he raises me here, I don't necessarily get the information. He may make a play here thinking I don't have the flush, and he may make a play at me and I don't actually get to showdown. I just fold because I believe him, and which is okay. But here you set yourself up to be raised off of the hand, and you went from a way ahead or way behind situation. You're still in that way ahead or way behind situation. So take advantage of your position, control the size of this pot, and check here 100% of the time.
Yeah, I agree. Check behind.
Excellent. Well, our hero says, no, you guys are wrong.
We're idiots, remember?
I'm going to bet $1.40. And he says his reasoning is he figures if the villain does have the flush, he's going to call a raise, and I'm done with the hand. What do we think about that?
Normally, I would let Lee go first, but I have to say something there. I mean, really, just a second ago, he said he puts him on spades. The guy hits his spades, and now he's going to just throw away $1.40, hoping that the guy doesn't raise or folds. I mean, why? If you put him on spades, why are you betting? Why not just try to hit the king of the 10 and then take his whole stack? So it makes no sense to me to bet out there. And then you're betting $1.40, knowing that you'll fold if he raises you, and you're just going to lose $1.40 for no reason? That's just not a good play at all.
I agree.
All right!
But see, Chris got to be the heavy there.
I know. That's good.
The Slick's at home going, man, the Cosenza, he's such a jerk. But Lee is awesome.
It's still the crack of dawn here, man. It's good. I don't have to talk so much.
All right, well, we do bet the 140. Our villain just calls, though. And our hero says he's done unless the river comes the 10 of clubs. So our final board is king of hearts, 7 of spades, 10 of spades, 6 of spades, 10 of clubs. We boat up. There's 523 in the pot. And our villain bets 405 into that.
All right.
Which is half the remaining stack of 815.
I have no idea whose hand this was. I didn't see it ahead of time, but it just feels so much like we have the same hand as this guy now. It feels like they both have King 10. It just feels that way to me. But go ahead, Lee. Whatever you want to say.
whatever you want to.
I mean, that's just beautiful. I mean, if he's if he did flop a set, he didn't flop a set of tens now.
Right.
You know, he didn't flop a set of kings now. Well, I mean, no, he could have flopped a set of kings. So that's the only hand that's beating you right now. You could have the 8-9 of spades, right? So the 8-9 of spades and pocket kings, you've got the third nuts. This is a very good card for us where, you know, we're happy that he's betting, you know. So it looks like, you know, I got to think he flopped the flush draw or he flopped a set of sevens. I think he plays a set of kings a little bit faster and doesn't do the little min raise thing on the flop because he's likely to be scared of that flush draw, as most people are, which I think we've mentioned before.
Plus the check on the turn, too.
Yeah, and he checked when the spade hit, so it could be, you know, that could be indicative of the set.
Right.
Because now he's a little bit scared that spade hit, and he's probably like, oh, man, I should have played my set faster, but... I just, you know, it doesn't seem like he, you know, he could have pocket kings. It's just the most unlikely. The 8-9 of spades and the pocket sevens are more likely, or just any other two spades. You know, if he had, he could have had just a 10 in his hand as well, the way that he played this. That's absolutely a possibility because he's, you know, he bet the pot. And, you know, and I mentioned that before about like having second pair, you find out where you're at, but then when he gets just min raise, he's like, oh, wait, let me see if he's just making a play, makes another min raise, and then he slows down on the turn and check calls the smaller bet, and now hits, if he hit his 10 here, he may think that he's got the best hand. You know, he could have 10-7, he could have 10-6, he could have just like 10-jack or something, and he's spewing here, because those hands should be, you know, like check calling on the river, but once he bets out here and he bet half your stack, I'm putting the rest in for sure.
Yeah, it just feels like they have the same hand now. I mean, it could be pocket kings and just be the worst cooler ever, but to me it just feels like that, but I agree. Get it in there now.
I mean, I just can't put him on a flush now unless it's the straight flush. I just don't understand if you had the flush, why you would call that turn bet and then bet so much on the river.
Yeah.
It seems to me it's screaming like a boat, and if it's a boat, then you know, like we said, we've got it. So,
I think I don't want to discount it because I think it's pretty indicative of a flush play because if he does have a flush, you know, he now gets tricky on the turn and just check calls, and now.
But why bet out so much when a dangerous card comes on the river?
Because people get a lot of times I see this. It's almost like. it's almost like the, oh, damn, I'm possibly beat now, so now I have to bet more. Like, they kind of freak out, and then they make this bet, and they're going to punish themselves for playing the hand slowly. So it just, I don't know. It's something to that with the, it's
that's
some
weird,
of that gambler's mentality that I feel like, it's why people call, they're like, they got kings and an ace is on the board, and it's clear the opponent has the ace. But they're going to call. They're going to call to prove how unlucky they are so they can tell them.
I mean, I don't think I'm alone in saying this. Pretty much every person on the planet, when they have the nut flush on the turn and they're getting some action, they're all saying to themselves, don't pair the board, don't pair the board, don't pair the board, don't pair the board, don't pair the board. So if this guy had the nut flush or any flush, unless it's the straight flush, he's saying, don't pair the board, don't pair the board, don't pair the board. So when the board pairs, why does he – there's just no way you fire that much in. You know, he's got to have the straight flush on the same boat as us. That's got to be it.
That's got to be it.
Well, that's what it feels like.
I just want to be careful about completely discounting it. I agree with you. I wouldn't do that either. I'm going to check call at that point because I'm saying that same thing. Yeah. I don't want that board to pair, but it's also one of those things where he may just be betting. He doesn't want to just go check and lose the value. He could be planning to bet and actually fold, knowing that I have to have a boat if I raise.
Right.
So even though he's making a big bet that's half the stack, if he's confident that I'm not going to raise unless I have a full house, then and I might call if I had trip tens or something like that. It's a bet that it's a good bet as long as he's willing with the flush, as long as he folds to a raise. If you're not going to fold to the raise, though, you better not make this bet. You better check call.
Well, why are you betting then?
Because you may be able to get the showdown for that same. Well, if you don't bet, then your opponent may just check back and you lose value if they have a hand they might have called with. So that's why I think it's not awful. I prefer to check and call.
Yeah.
But it's if you check and your opponent shoves, now you're in a tough spot with your flush. Now you've got to guess. If you lead out, it's actually, I'm gonna change my mind here because I've put myself in a couple of spots recently where I've done this. You try to set the price for the river here. I would not bet this much, but I would lead. I think I like the lead on the river by the villain here. If you're willing to fold to a raise,
right? So much less though, like a $2 bet or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna, maybe half the pot, whatever that is right now, which is probably about that. So, yeah, so I would, if you lead out, it's just you get value from the weaker hands if they can call, and you minimize what you have to put in to find out that information. You want to get value if they can call. And if this person has trip tens, a hand that they could call a small bet with and also would just check back to you on the river most likely, right? I would just check it with the trip tens there, I think. Because there's no you don't expect a better hand, a worse hand to be able to call you. So just find out what your opponent has. They're playing online. He can look it up and see what the guy has. So I don't mind the lead there. Like I said, I lead less, but you have to fold if you have to have the discipline when you're in these spots. It just gives you a little more confidence and security that you're making the right decision rather than check to him and then have somebody make it like a huge bet. And now you don't know if he's making an overbet with the nuts or if he's making an overbet with a bluff. But if you lead into him and he's able to raise you, you can safely fold a flush here.
Right.
So
what happened, Scott?
Interesting.
What did the guy do?
All right. We deduce that we have the best hand. We shove. He calls, and he turns over. Seven of hearts. Mm-hmm. Seven of diamonds.
Yeah. Wow. We got lucky.
Yep.
Yeah, we got lucky.
It sounds like we kind of discounted the sevens early on in this hand. Were we wrong to discount them?
I think we said the kings and tens were the sets that were unlikely. The sevens were, and then the way you played it felt just like a set because we said a set of kings would check the turn because of the flush, getting nervous, and then pairing the board, betting out. So it felt like a set of kings or a set of sevens, we said, and we knew it wasn't tens. So I mean, it did feel like sevens.
Looking back, the way our villain played, I mean, can we admit that the flop was kind of odd? I mean, he bets out pot, which makes sense. We min-raise him, and then he just adds another small bet in. Yeah. I mean, should we not get more active at that point, Lee, or not?
If you're the villain?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, if the villain, I'm raising much more. See, that's if I'm the villain, if I'm the villain in this hand, we're probably going to end up with all the chips in on the flop. And as our hero, I'm going with that and putting all my chips in. The money's getting in on the flop, and I'm going to get my money in bad, and I'm going to suck out, and it's going to be fun. I'm not going to fold the king 10 here, blind versus blind, right on the flop. And with the set, I'm not going to let somebody min raise me if they're on some kind of draw. I'm going to re-raise bigger. So when I let out for 40, bet the pot, and somebody made it 80, I'm popping that up to like $2, $2.50, something like that. And then if I'm the hero, I'm just putting the chips in. So and then I'm snap calling with my pocket sevens, and the board's going to run out, and then I'm going to have my bad beat to email to you guys and complain about it.
And then his play on the turn I thought was interesting too. He checks. Obviously, the flush draw got there. So, of course, he groaned a little, I'm sure, checked. We bet more than half the pot, $1.40, and he just calls. Is it a crying call there, hoping the pair of the board? Or, I mean, it just seems odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd call there. I'm not going to give the guy credit for a flush, and obviously correctly so here, but I'm going to call and hope that, that we can check it down on the river if I don't improve. But if I do improve, I mean, I think once, once the 10 hits, you got to feel like you're good with your sevens here, and you've probably got the flush trapped. And the thing is though, when he leads and the guy comes over the top, if you don't fold, then you're saying the guy's an idiot who's coming over the top with his flush on a paired board. And that's going to happen sometimes. And you're going to fold once you got the second bottom full house, but you don't want to be folding full houses too often.
Yes, not Omaha.
And so, I'm not getting away from the hand. I mean, for the guy would have to, I have to give him at least some credit for being an idiot as well. So, I'm not going to improve to a full house here on the river and fold. So I'm getting my money in with both of these hands on the river.
All right. I agree too. I think that's, I think the guy played it the way I would have played it, except for on the flop. I think I would have bet more instead of a min raise. But other than that, I don't really fault the way this guy played the hand.
Yep.
All right. Well, we appreciate the analysis, Lee, and we're going to send our hero a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net, just in case he doesn't have Lee on speed dial to analyze his hands. And everybody else, email your hands of the week to podcast@antiantmagazine.com. And as normal, Chris and I will bungle through it unless Lee happens to be on the show, when we'll have Sterling? Sterling great commentary. Sperling's not a word, right?
Man, I don't know how we got into broadcasting and made it this long, I got to tell you.
Man, I wonder that all the time.
I've got a voice for print.
Yeah, that's my saying. Well, I want to thank Copper for barking during the show.
Hey, buddy. And, good job.
And I want to thank Lee for joining us again. Lee, always good to catch up with you, man.
Thanks, guys. Hey, I'm off. It'll be done by the time this airs, but I'm off this weekend to go defend my ring up at Harris and the WSOP circuit, the $1,500 event, which was now the main event this year. It wasn't the main last year. They had the 5K. So right. This is the $1,500 event. Starts on Sunday. So hopefully by the time this airs, I'll have my second ring, and then the 10K regional championship, which is new this year.
Yeah.
I'll be playing that the following weekend. So keep your eye out for some tweets and hopefully some good updates. Been playing a bunch, and hopefully I'll keep the good run going. But thanks a bunch for having me on. It's great to be back on with you guys.
Well, we'll follow you, man. Best of luck to you.
All right, thanks. Talk to you soon.
You too. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
I just want to be sure Lee's awake since he just woke up, man.
I know, man. You guys...
What kind of job do you got, man?
Just get me up in the middle of the night. I can't wait. I'm gonna start calling you guys at, like, I don't know.
Yeah, what are you going to say, 8 in the morning? Because you're not awake.
No, I'm going to call you. I am awake at 8. That's the problem. I'm going to call you 2 hours before you normally get up.
All right.
Yeah, I don't sleep, man. I like to live every minute of life.
Yeah, you sleep while you play, dude.
Nice.
I do better when I do.
Glad I'm recording this. Okay, Scott, do you want to do the intro or do you want me to?
I will, I guess.
Alrighty, we're rolling. No, I don't care. We're rolling. Go ahead.
How come I never get to do the intro?
What are you going to say? Hey, I'm Lee Child and I'm fantastic? I mean, what are you going to
say?
That's my own horn. Yeah.
Welcome to the Lee Child Show. I'm Lee Child.
Oh, we're doing that at like 5 a.m.
Today I have two bums on my show.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel.
If they were boxers, they'd be tomato cans.
That's a good one.
Thanks for joining us. All right, so Scott, you do the intro, and I'll kick back, and we'll pepper them with some questions.
Pepper them? Wow. Yeah. Now I feel like Connie Mack or something.
Connie Mack.